Welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronic supply chain fields. I'm Mike Buteau, Editor-in-Chief of PCD&F and Circuits Assembly. Today's podcast is sponsored by PCB West, the leading conference and exhibition for the printed circuit design and manufacturing industry. Join thousands of engineers and designers this September at the Santa Clara Convention Center. Visit the website at PCBWest.com for information. This week, we continue our series called The Screw-Ups. In these segments, we talk to experts in electronics manufacturing about specific problems they've encountered and offer up some potential solutions. My guest today is Tim O'Neill. He has nearly 25 years' experience with solder materials, primarily with AIM Solder, where he is currently technical marketing manager. And our topic today is solder paste storage and handling. Tim, what do you have for us?
Hi, Mike. That's a great topic, as 80% of defects on a surface mount line can be traced back to the printer. The condition of the solder paste is a very important variable. And so our goal is to control those variables so that we don't introduce process variables. You know, when we manufacture a product, our goal is always product consistency. And because every time we deliver a product that has any variation in it, that means that the customer's process is getting variation introduced to it that needs to be compensated for, whether it's increased squeegee pressure, different separation speeds, or whatever things we would that can be done on the printer to accommodate changes in solder paste. So our goal is to provide the most consistent product possible. And one of the ways to ensure that the product arrives to the printer in the most consistent way possible is to ensure that the handling and storage are done correctly. And it's amazing how many operations cut corners in an attempt to save money, not realizing that they're putting their process at risk. You know, we invest $1 million in a production line, tens of thousands of dollars in trained operators that are all adversely affected by a $50 jar of solder paste that's being used beyond its useful life or not appropriate for the application. You know, I always say that using fresh paste on a daily basis is a cheap insurance policy, and I believe that wholeheartedly. And even though we sell solder paste for a living, it's not a selfish endeavor. It's really the best advice that we can give. And, you know, an analogy that I give during my handling presentation is it's house paint. You know, you wouldn't put up the scaffolding, tape the windows, and then go downstairs to the basement and get the paint from when the house was built with the expectation that that paint is going to perform properly, because the labor and the expense is not really in the paint. The labor and expense is in the preparation and the application.
Wait, you don't do that?
No, Mike, I don't. I can't say I've never done it, only to have the paint roll onto the wall and then roll right back onto the roller with the second pass. So I learned very quickly it makes sense to go down to the hardware store and get yourself a fresh gallon of paint.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's really
wrong for years.
It really is cheap insurance. And, you know, the problem is that when you look at the line item for consumables and you look at solder paste and you're spending $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 a year on the consumable, that assigns a lot of value to it, particularly to the person that's writing checks, and it's an ongoing expense. So any monies that can be saved are perceived as savings without realizing what it's risking downstream in the process. And so I'll just give a quick overview of what we would recommend and then talk a little bit about what I think the future holds as it relates to the importance of solder paste handling, as well as developments in solder paste that make some of those handling issues, I think, potentially more profound, but as we evolve our products, maybe less significant. I'm not sure which way we're going with it. When we manufacture the solder paste, after it's been packaged, it goes into refrigeration. And refrigeration slows down the chemical reactions between the flux medium and the solder powder. Solder powder has a vast amount of surface area. And when you combine metal powder with acids, amines, and other chemicals that want to interact with the powder, the best way to keep that material stable is to keep it refrigerated, slow those reactions down, And then when it's ready to be used, you allow it to come to room temperature and introduce it to the process. So we refrigerate it in our operation, and then when we ship it from our facility, whether it's shipped direct to a customer or shipped to a distribution center, packaged with cold packs. So the packaging has been developed and tested to ensure that we get at least 72 hours out of the cold packs. One thing I would note is that if your solder paste arrives with the cold packs having been melted, don't panic. That just means that the cold packs have done their job. They've absorbed heat rather than passing it into the solder paste. And, a melted cold pack is not necessarily a problem. Really, it's the duration of the exposure at time at temperature. Anything longer than 72 hours, and depending on the chemistry, we might get nervous. The paste arrives. It's labeled with refrigerate upon receipt. This is a very common area where the solder paste will be left out in the shipping area. The shippers aren't trained on the importance of getting that material into refrigeration as soon as it arrives. So that's a really important step. That is one of the places where we find the paste gets mishandled. So I would encourage the operations manager to make sure that the shipping people are aware that materials that require refrigeration are refrigerated right away, particularly solder paste. AIM, I don't think we have a product that has a shorter shelf life than 3 months. So we try to manufacture products so that they arrive to a customer with at least 80% shelf life. Doesn't always work out that way due to supply chain, but in general, that's our goal, so that there's plenty of time for the customer to purchase, consume, and consume the material. So it can stay comfortably in refrigeration for as long as we state on the technical data sheet that it's good, sealed, and refrigerated conditions. We've performed a battery of tests internally on that particular formulation, and we know that its performance characteristics fit within the guidelines. Once the material is being prepared for use, it makes its way out onto the shop floor. We recommend on our technical data sheets a minimum of 8 hours to allow the material to come to room temperature. The reason for that is we don't want condensation to form on the material. Depending upon the environment that it's being used in, any moisture is going to condense on that cold metal that's below the dew point. And just like a Coke can on a hot day, on a hot, humid day, and you get a lot of liquid water that can get introduced to the solder paste during the print process. And remember, we're dealing with metal. So you introduce moisture into metals and acids, and it accelerates the chemical interactions that degrade the paste's performance. Different paste formulas are going to be more prone to moisture contamination. No cleans are generally quite robust, whereas water solubles tend to be more sensitive, and certain alloy combinations can be more sensitive. So you have to be mindful of that, and that's the reason we do it that way. And we say 8 hours. We know we're giving ourselves a little buffer on either end, because if you're anything like me, you know, you don't read the instructions, you dig right in, and then you open the instructions after you get too far into the weeds and figure out what you did wrong. I figure everybody's cutting corners on allowing time for solder paste to warm up. You can conduct your own in-house testing if you like. Our TDS is our guidelines. If you've done testing that indicates 2 hours is good for your operation, we're not going to argue with you unless, of course, there's a problem. And then we say, well, how long did you let it come out? 2 hours. Well, that's a little short. So, you know, customers are free to make determinations on how to use the product that best suits their requirements. The disadvantage of refrigerating solder paste is that you do have to go through this warm-up period. And if somebody forgets to take it out for the shift the following day, or there's a delivery issue, now you've got to wait for the paste to come to temperature, which the market responded with some products that advertise no refrigeration required. And that is also the case for many of our products. We've just been reluctant to promote it from the marketing side because we view refrigeration as a control. It ensures that the product has been held at a constant temperature and eliminates that variable and any potential issues that that variability might introduce. For example, if a product is being shipped to the Philippines versus a product that's being shipped to Canada, if they've both been stored at 40 degrees C, well, then you know nothing's been exposed to excessive temperature. Heat is really the enemy. That is what we're trying to avoid. It does a couple of things to solder paste. One is that it increases those interactions even at relatively low temperatures, so that the solder paste's rheological properties are affected or its wetting properties affected. But it'll also drive flux out of suspension, and you'll end up with separated paste. A little bit of separation, it can be normal. I mean, I would consult with your vendor to make sure if you do see separation that it's considered normal. Some chemistries just get a little skin of flux on the top. That's not a big deal. But gross separation is typically a sure sign of overexposure to heat and heat damage. That product may be salvageable, but usually it's not.
Do you have any examples of steps customers have taken to perhaps try to speed up that process, like maybe putting the jar in the microwave or something like that?
All the above. I've seen it go into the microwave, run under hot water, put on top of the oven. There's the most common under a lamp, under an armpit.
None of that works, all of
those things have been done to accelerate the process. Well, you know, this is really interesting part of the discussion. If you're printing large pads, gross diameter pads, 0603s and, you know, large deposits, it may not have any impact at all, or no discernible impact, because there's a big enough hole and enough paste gets through where an adequate solder joint is formed. When you're printing a 0.4 pitch millimeter BGA, however, that solder paste needs to be in perfect condition to make sure that the transfer efficiencies are going to be what they need to be to form an interconnect. And that's really, in my mind, at the discretion of the operator, because the operator, again, I always go to food analogies because I'm sure you like to eat. I like to eat. The lady in the deli who's been working there for as long as you can remember, when you ask for a pound of turkey breast, she doesn't need a scale. She knows what a pound of turkey breast looks like, and she can probably do it within a couple of tenths of a pound either way, just by eye. And your operators develop that same type of intuition. They can look at solder paste and say, I'm only doing a bottom side. It's only 0603s. I've got enough on the stencil to get through the rest of the job, and then I can clean the printer up for the day. I'll be fine. And usually I would rely on an operator's intuition. If it was my operation, it's very difficult to write those subtleties into a work instruction. Some companies do, and some companies just scrap paste after a certain period of time. And that's that. They recognize that solder paste is the foundation of the process, and that using fresh paste is a cheap insurance policy. They've invested $1 million in a production line. They've invested tens of thousands of dollars in their labor and training. So they just say, you know what, for the extra $50 a day, $100 a day that it costs me to ensure the best possible outcomes for my production line, I just scrap it and use fresh paste every 6 hours. And that's that. And that does ensure that the paste is in the best possible condition and will never be an issue if it's handled properly, or at least takes the handling component out or the aging of the paste out of the equation. So that is best practice. If you were to ask me what is best practice, that's best practice. But in a competitive environment where solder paste is an expensive line item on the BOM, people tend to cut corners, and those corners, cutting corners may or may not have consequences depending upon the quality requirements and the build requirements.
So it sounds like there's no direct industry standard for paste handling. It's more just the proverbial manufacturer's recommendations.
As agreed between the seller and the user. If a customer comes to me and they want to do something that's outside of our recommendations, then it's reasonable. Often what we do to document it for auditing purposes, we will provide something on AIM letterhead that says, we've reviewed this process, we deem it acceptable. We don't do that very often, frankly, because we think that our guidelines are what they are for a reason. But we have done it. There's some customers that have some really unique needs, and we want to get them to their goals and not just dig in our heels and adhere to dogma. We'll try and accommodate it if it's reasonable. Some customers just have totally unreasonable requests that we would think would be bad practice. I went into one account, and the guy was complaining. He's like, your paste has terrible shelf life. It's okay. Let me get out there and take a look at it. So we went out, and that was a field technical guy. I'm not exaggerating. He had 7 jars of solder paste lined up inside the printer. And so he would take a little bit out of each jar and create a bead on the printer. And that was his way of making sure that nothing got wasted. So he had the older paste, combining it with slightly newer paste still, slightly newer paste still, and that was his system. And that was not one I could endorse. I had to tell him, I think you'd be much better off scrapping this hotter paste than starting fresh. It's crazy what people will do to save a couple of grams of solder paste. It's, I get it, but I don't think that the downstream costs are realized by the operator at the printer, and they don't have visibility on what it's actually costing the company in rework and repair. One of the simplest things that can be done is to just simply log the time that the material was removed from refrigeration, both in a log and on the tube or jar itself. That ensures that whoever grabs it knows that they're not grabbing something that was taken out of refrigeration 2 hours ago instead of the recommended 8 hours ago. It also gives you a history that if there is an issue, you can go back to make sure that the product was handled properly. So it's just, that to me is just good hygiene. And the way that I would do it if it was me setting up the work instructions for the printer operator. The other thing is the environment. We have environmental controls that range from very sophisticated, constantly monitored charts on the walls that are monitoring temperature and humidity over time and logging it. And then I've got a guy whose climate control system consists of opening the loading dock door or closing the loading dock door. So, you know, we formulate for the full scope and breadth of the marketplace from the Philippines to Montreal. So we understand that we're going to have a lot of environmental variation. And the products are usually sufficiently robust that they can withstand those kind of variations. But hot environments challenge the paste in certain ways, and believe it or not, cold environments challenge the paste in other ways. When you get to either extreme of the seasons, sometimes accommodations may have to be made where the solder paste and the environment that it's being used in just can't, they don't fit. That's the importance of good handling, shipping. We ship usually P1, if it's an overnight, we ship overnight. So sometimes we can, again, keep costs contained by using ground services that are an overnight delivery stop. Other times we insist on shipping P1. Typically in the summertime, we'll ship P1 or red to guarantee the material arrives overnight, you know, July, August. And then we can switch back when the weather cools down to a less expensive shipping option. Of course, the customers can assume the risk and tell us what to do, at which point we walk away and say, yeah, we're not going to be, that's against our recommendation, so we're not going to be responsible for that, but we'll happily accommodate your request, understanding that the paste could get damaged if it sits out for any length of time in these types of temperatures. So again, we try to be accommodating, but we also give the best guidance that we can.
Now, I've opened up the jar of paste. Do you supply a tool for mixing it, or do I just, you know, grab a knife from the cafeteria, you know, I mix it with my finger? I mean, you know, does it really matter?
The tool matters only in that you don't want to use a metal tool for fear that it scratches and lifts plastic out of the jar and introduces it into the paste undetected. So we supply a plastic spatula. It looks like something you'd see in a sandwich shop. Our recommendation is to mix the paste lightly in one direction for a minute. Again, knowing that people will do it for about 20 seconds before they tire of it. The benefit of stirring the paste prior to introducing it to the printer is to add energy to it. Solder paste is a thixotropic material, and what that means is that it thickens when energy is removed and it shear thins when energy is applied. So the way solder paste actually works is that as it rolls on the stencil, it's being shear thinned at the interface between the squeegee and the stencil surface, where it's becoming thin enough where it will fill the aperture. And then as the squeegee passes over and that energy is removed, the solder paste thickens so that when the stencil is removed, it maintains a nice crisp brick. Again, I'll use paint as an analogy. Paint has to be thin enough to spread over the wall, but once the brush is not applying energy, it has to thicken so it doesn't run and drip. So in that way, they're similar in that regard. So that's shear thinning it prior to applying it to the stencil, or by stirring it, will ensure that the solder paste is at the best optimal viscosity and you don't have to do too many knead strokes to get the energy into it so that it flows properly. You know, that's why the squeegee and the stencil will quote unquote load up on the first few prints, because it's thick, doesn't have the energy added to it, and then it gets thinner as it shear thins and energy is introduced into it. So that's why we recommend stirring it. We do not recommend automated paste mixers. They can over shear paste. So these are automated mixers, not unlike a paint mixer. And the idea is that the paste is being flipped over itself in the jar. They advertise that it can eliminate the need for warm-up time and get the paste to a consistent viscosity. What we have found that they can work, they're very popular in Asia, but we've also found that there is a high likelihood that the paste will be shear thinned to the point where it can never recover. So once you shear thin paste beyond a certain amount, it'll print fairly well because now it's like soup, but it won't maintain its shape when the stencil's removed. You know, when somebody says, oh, I'm using a mixer, I'm like, okay, but you're better off under mixing it than over mixing it is generally our experience.
But look, no stringing.
Yeah, no, definitely no string. You might get some bridging, but you won't get any stringing. Again, these little subtle things all have a significant bearing on product quality. You know, like I said at the beginning, 80% of the defects are usually traced back to the printer, and the solder paste is the material that's being printed. So it stands to reason solder paste needs to be in a certain condition for everything to work properly. Well, I mentioned the pastes that don't require refrigeration. That's a significant advancement. My only concern with those is that, not unlike the mixing for 1 minute and the 8 hours from storage, people might take liberties that actually can damage the product because it's not in that controlled environment. So I'd be very reluctant to make that a highlighted feature. But like I said, if you're okay with it and you, as a customer, have proven that it's not a negative impact on your process, whatever works for you is okay. And the other thing that's coming down is the greater need for finer mesh powders and alternative alloys. Handling is going to become even more important as we move towards these materials. Finer mesh powders increase the surface area that's available to interact with the flux significantly. And my analogy is a shoebox filled with marbles. Imagine that your printed paste deposit is a shoebox full of marbles, and that's type 4. And you dump all the marbles out and you fill it full of BBs. That's type 6. And so what you've done is you've got the exact same amount of metal. It's the same volume of metal. It's the shoebox. But you've exploded the surface area by 4 to 5 times by making the balls smaller. And all that oxide that's now exposed to that flux medium is being worked on by the flux. And so you're going to introduce more variability into the product, into the paste performance. Paste handling is going to become important to ensure that those products maintain their integrity for the process. That's the danger or the concern that we have with these finer mesh powders. The finer mesh powders represent a significant challenge for the manufacturers, us, because in order to contend with all this additional oxide, we have to create more aggressive fluxes. More aggressive fluxes are going to increase the reaction rate with the powder before reflow, i.e. printer storage. And so now you've increased the interaction further still by increasing the activity of the flux chemistry to compensate for all this additional surface area. So I anticipate paste handling will become more significant and more important as we go to finer mesh materials. And then as we go to low temperature alloys for soldering, particularly the bismuth bearing alloys, bismuth bearing solders are prone to solder balling and other solder related defects, and it's directly related to paste handling. So again, if you're going to consider using something other than SAC 305, we're going to have to look at our paste handling and make sure that everything is done as per the recommendations to ensure that the material performs as intended. A bunch of little solder balls represents a tremendous amount of manual labor to pick them all off. So if they can be avoided just by simple paste handling adjustments, then that's the best place to address it. That's where I think paste handling fits today. And I think where paste handling remains a significant consideration looking to the future.
Finally, we've been talking mostly about jars. Is there any special treatment needed for the solder shipped in cartridges?
Our tests indicate that when you dispense the solder paste through the quarter inch, so most of us use a 6-ounce Semco cartridge. It's kind of the industry standard that's evolved. has got a quarter inch NPT outlet. So when you pump that solder paste through that small orifice, you're shear thinning it and adding energy. So while you can't manipulate the stuff in the tube, the act of dispensing it onto the printer actually shear thins it to where it's in a pretty good state where it can be used straight out of the tube. So allowing it to come to room temperature and shear thinning it through the dispense process is usually adequate. Storing them tip down reduces flux separation. When you store them on their side, you have all that additional area that's available that allows the flux to migrate. Remember, you got two materials that are very dissimilar. The metal in the solder paste is 5 times denser than the flux medium. So they're homogeneous when we manufacture them. But as they sit in storage, they can, the less dense flux can tend to migrate through gravity to the lowest point. So if you stand them on the tip, it doesn't migrate as readily as it does when you lay them on their side.
Great. Well, that's a lot of good information, Tim. I really appreciate you coming on for this episode of The Screw-Ups.
Yeah, I think it's a great forum. Hopefully people listen and pick up bits and pieces of information that they can use to continually improve their process, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'd like to thank Tim O'Neill from AIM for coming on this episode of The Screw-Ups, and thanks to our sponsor, PCB West, the leading conference and exhibition for the printed circuit design and manufacturing industry. Visit the website at pcbwest.com for information. For PCB Chat, I'm Mike Buteau. Have a nice day.